Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. John Montgomery talking to you from the GTC conference. Well, actually, the airport in San Jose on the way home. How's it going, my friend?
We go live now to San Jose, where our correspondent on the streets of San Jose. John, how is it there? What is the mood of the crowd like at GTC?
Actually, it's amazing. Everyone's so positive with the announcements and the incredible tech that's shown that they're looting the streets of NVIDIA gear. Anyway, but in all seriousness, it has been a good show. A quick bit of whirlwind, I guess, but some interesting stuff at the show, as always.
So, like, you've posted, as we're recording this, some stuff on FX Guide about the conference, so I don't want to go over that in huge amounts of depth. But
yeah.
But on day two, I was really interested in the program because it had lots of really interesting things about Pixar once again showing their real-time stuff. And I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this in person, as it were. So tell me, did you get to the Pixar session? And
I got to one of them. Yeah, I had a conflict early on with a pre-scheduled appointment to get some scoop for stuff that's coming out tomorrow.
Right.
But I was able to see actually the Lava presentation. Now, I think you're speaking of
One
of them, which was Presto, which was, we actually covered that a bit last year. But the Lava one was actually pretty interesting. It's a short film that's coming out later this year. So they weren't able to actually show the whole short film at this conference. So they did show some clips. There have been some previews online related to that as well. We'll hopefully have some high-res imagery in the story. But it was pretty interesting. They did a nice job, I think. In the presentation, because it was Brian Bassforth and Dirk Van Gelder who showed it. Dirk's the one who's really, I don't want to call him the public face of Presto, but he seems to be doing a lot of things related to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he did last year's, didn't he?
Yes, exactly. But I think, you know, the takeaway from that, and it's an interesting kind of situation because the presentations aren't necessarily targeted exclusively at people who are familiar with the media and entertainment, right? So it's not quite the C-graph, computer graphics level type implications. But what was fascinating about it was kind of talking about their transition within their pipeline of having their animators work with effectively flat shaded models or even gray flat models with Phong shading to actually textured models and the benefits of doing so. This was actually, the recent films have actually been the first time that they're really starting to really widely deploy this, but it does provide many benefits to actually, you know, see things that are related to shading and textures while you're animating. Especially in this case with Uku the volcano, the hero, I guess, in the Lava short film.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some stuff that I wanted to ask you about that because, there's some stuff from Silicon Studio, which is middleware, I guess. And it's Yebis, I think it is. YEBIS2, I think, has come out now, which allows like a bunch of post-processing. It's something that I know that they were using on the volcanic stuff. I don't know if on the Lava stuff, sorry. Did they get into any of that kind of level of detail? Was it much more kind of abstract?
This was more, I'm not sure what stage that would involve, this session was targeted towards allowing the animators to see a more richly shaded and textured model pipeline.
So isn't that a bit more like the earlier sort of Presto stuff? Because I thought that would be, sorry, I must have misunderstood. I thought it wasn't so much discussing that as the latter stuff, but perhaps not.
Yeah, no, it may have been initially the plan, but yeah, in this case, this is definitely about kind of building upon the earlier Presto presentation and able to see that. But what was interesting about this compared to that one, the one last year that was interesting, is they've obviously had some time under the belt and with it inside production, and so they're able to bring up certain things where it was really great and certain places where it was actually problematic. So an example that would be great in this case, so the main hero is Uku the volcano, right, in this, and if you look at the publicity photos, I'm sure we'll have some in the article, but it's the volcano character. And if you were to animate that without some of the textures and materials that were going to be applied later down the stream, things like stretching and stuff would not be readily available to you while you were looking at that animation. So it's basically a big volcano with eyes, eyebrows, and a mouth, right?
Yeah.
And so in the earlier tests, what was happening is they were finding out that when they wanted to animate the mouth, they're running into problems when they're doing the test renders that, you know what, stretching rock really blows away the perception that this volcano is made out of rock when it's stretching and so forth. So that was, you know, that's a really tangible example of a type situation where it's really useful to see. Other things, like they pointed out in the session, were eyebrows. So you have a rock volcano covered with rock eyebrows. And so the textures, and because of the complexity of the textures and shading, end up blending together. So you really have to kind of exaggerate your animation of the eyebrows, and they showed, you know, the back and forth we've kind of seen before, but showing the animation with the texture applied and without the texture applied. And without the texture applied, with just a flat shaded tong or a simpler texture, the eyebrow animation is way over the top, right? Because you're having to exaggerate it. But when you put the texture on, because it's all blending and it's complicated visual, you really need to push the limits of the animation. So
right.
That's one aspect of it, what they were showing.
Yeah, because last year's Presto demonstration did a similar thing in that it had the main character from Monsters, Inc., who of course has fur, animated
volume.
Without the fur, he looks weedy. With fur, you know, he looked right. The stuff that I was referring to is additional GPU stuff that I thought you were alluding to, which was the barrel lens distortion, depth of field stuff that we're also adding in GPU to preview that from the middleware stuff that Silicon Studio had done. But it sounds like that wasn't the case.
Was just simply not part of that presentation.
Yeah.
I was at today as all. But it's interesting as they're working through this process. So now they're basically moving everyone to enable this, and the animators are really like it. Maybe some of the ones who've been doing it for decades, you know, or used to doing it the old way. So it's actually seemed to be working well for them in their pipeline, with you know, a couple exceptions that end up being. You know, things like going too far early on. So you're animating and doing this test with some early developed materials, right? And maybe certain aspects of the shading and stuff is not correct. So you end up having stuff that's actually not representative of what the final image will be. And so you're getting actually, you end up, instead of getting animation feedback, you're kind of getting creative feedback about some of the lighting because the specular interferes with it from, you know, someone who's not, they're not really ready to approach that at that point, right? So it's kind of putting the cart before the horse in that case.
Right. You're not focusing on what you need to focus on. You're sort
exactly.
Of,
yeah. And because that's one of the things they are having issues with, and they're kind of working on figuring it out, and that's moving that data back from shading to animation. You know, at what point does that happen? At what point do you show stuff where you're in a good position to do so? And that's one of the, you know, problems with doing that.
One of the great things... I was going to say, it's one of the great things about this whole Presto system is its use of Pixar's Open Subdiv, which is massively parallelized on the GPU and the CPU, for that matter.
Yeah.
And that really gives you these terrifically subdivided meshes that animators are finding so helpful in terms of getting those expression nuances. And we saw that last year with the examples from Monsters, Inc. Sounds like similar thing with the rocks then.
Yeah, rocks and then avoiding certain areas of animation in the rocks and so forth. And the other thing is actually simply is it, that said, you have the potential because the materials and shading aren't right, or actually doing something that the director falls in love with that you can't actually effectively accomplish downstream. And of course, that's a giant that can be a giant problem actually, and an expensive problem by the standpoint of time and so forth. If someone falls in love with that, so they're working through some of that, I guess, you know, over the process, which is natural, but. It was an interesting presentation. It wasn't, you know, too far removed from what was seen last year, but I thought that additional perspective of having used it now, more widely in production and finding out what works and actually running the pitfalls where it doesn't was actually kind of an interesting aspect of the presentation today.
Yeah, I think in the short film, actually, there are two volcanoes, right? It's a huge love affair over, you know, hundreds of years kind of thing. So I just really envy you being able to see that.
Yeah. It was a good presentation and great to see that. Oh, sorry, I just lost a bit of my train of thought there.
That's right. And so moving away from that particular one example, you obviously commented on stuff to do with GPU we've seen from Chaos, from Otoy, from a bunch of people. Were there any sort of people, I mean, most of those people we kind of knew about before we headed in? Yeah. Was there something that's got, you know, sort of just bumped into, run across that was unexpected, someone you'd never heard of?
Yeah, I mean, well, I had heard of them before, but there's an article in our day one report. There's a little bit of a section about the folks at Redshift, guys that came from a gaming background. And I know they were across the radar, but I didn't really talk to them in depth before about it. They're located in Southern California. But what's kind of interesting with them is they come from a gaming background. So their goal from the start was to develop a GPU production renderer. I would say without the baggage of having done a CPU version before, and without the baggage of having developed for that and kind of being fixated on that. So I think it's interesting that they're coming at from a different angle where, you know, they accept memory issues and memory and texture transfer issues is just part of the job. It's not like they don't view that as like a drawback. They just kind of, because of where they came from, that's just something they've been dealing with, right? So they're well used to dealing with that, as frankly the people who are doing CPU renders now are moving to GPU. So I think that's interesting. One interesting presentation I went to today was on Turbulence FD. I think we covered a bit of that before. That's a GPU-based fluid sim simulator. And he's currently working on version 2.0 of that. It runs exclusively in the GPU, so obviously very fast, but starting to do things to optimize it by allowing a really clever multi-GPU functionality. So first of all, I guess not related to that, is they've started to use a sparse grid for the sims, which is obviously becoming common, you know, and if you look at something like OpenVDB, it utilizes that. Instead of having this huge, giant bounding box that they did in Turbulence FD1, it's actually much more compact, and you can limit the scope, obviously, of the sim. So that has a huge impact. I'm not saying he's using OpenVDB, but just similar to that, right, for those of you guys who are listening. Other interesting things they're doing with the viewport is instead of doing this volume slicing technique where you just layer up slices of the render and it doesn't really work very well on the GPU, they're actually using ray casting techniques and ending up with, you know, something between with 20 to 40 million voxels. He ends up being able to get about 15 frames a second or so on that, on some decent sized sims, utilizing ray casting. And then finally, effectively dealing with memory. And so he's kind of developed a very cool system, and it's a bit difficult to explain, but the idea behind it is he's doing really intelligent ways of actually breaking up the sim between GPUs dynamically. So he has kind of a built-in system. So as the sim grows, and there's some QuickTime movies that we'll have up in the article, you can actually see in this display, in this QuickTime movie, you can see how it switches from one GPU to two GPUs to three GPUs to four, based along, he's done tagged the outlines by color. So you can see it just happens on the fly dynamically. You get the same real-time speed. It's just transferred over four GPUs, whereas previously, had you run out of memory on your single GPU, you'd be down to, you know, you'd be lucky if you got one frame a second on that when you start running out of memory on that. So he's doing a lot of research in Turbulence FD2 that's kind of targeting a middle of the year time frame for a new beta for that. Interesting work that he did on that. There was people who were talking to him after the event. I met him last year, and so we're hanging out. And a lot of people from some major facilities asking questions about how he was doing some of the stuff.
So, he's based in Germany, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Maybe I'll run into him at FMX.
Yeah, he may well be there, and I think you really enjoy speaking to him. And again, I think it's also been nice because one of our members, Pascal, actually asked about making sure if I was going to go by the session. I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely going by. He asked about a course, and well, let me say we're working on it.
Hey, that's really, really interesting. Let me ask you about the big thing, which is, of course, the graphics cards. And, you know, for some people, this is one of the biggest aspects of what NVIDIA is doing, just, you know, the raw stuff that they themselves can get their hands on. Was there much in the roadmap that surprised you, or was it pretty logical?
It was pretty logical because basically they're kind of in this pattern where they have a major release every couple of years, relatively speaking, 18 months to 2 years between the next generation of chips or GPUs. And this year, we're a year away from the next architecture, which is Pascal. And I actually covered Pascal in a bit more detail last year when they first announced it. But that's the one with the stacked memory, what they're calling 3D memory
now. Stacked memory should be a big thing for us, right?
It should. Everyone's talking about that. I mean, every single person from Damien at MPC to the guys who are doing GPU renders, you know, they're really looking forward to that point in which memory becomes much less of an issue now. I mean, scenes obviously become more complex year over year as well, but it's getting to the point, I think, we're going to see that the memory is going to catch up, the speed of the process is going to catch up, and it's going to be, that memory issue is going to be way, way, way less of a mock issue moving forward.
Okay.
So, but that's still basically a year away. So this year they announced the Titan X, which is kind of a sensible card.
We saw that at GPU, right? That at GDC
at first, yeah. And they gave a little bit more detail about it, some more detail about it here. But yeah, then that's interesting. That's using the current architecture, which is Maxwell. One interesting thing is that, and I think one of the reasons why they're calling it a GeForce is that, in order to get more graphics performance, actually remove some of the general purpose computing that's better at double precision. So for hardcore math calculations, it can actually be a bit less accurate and much slower. So this card, if you're doing sims on it, utilizing CUDA, you're actually not going to see the kind of performance benefits that you might expect from a newer architecture of card. However, if you're doing things that are less reliant on that, just simple graphics things and other uses of GPU like ray tracing, it's going to be less of an issue.
I guess one of the other things you put in the article I just thought was super interesting was a comparison between where GPU is today and where it was in 2008, I think.
Ages ago, right?
Yeah, 2008. Kids today don't even remember what it was like 7 years ago. Yeah, but it was... It was one of those startling kind of image. I'm so glad you put that graphic in.
Well, what was interesting about that, did you see that was 7 years? But what I thought was crazy was that in 2 years, it's actually grown. Maybe I didn't left that out of the draft. I did, actually. Actually, what's interesting is if you turn the clock back to just a couple years ago, they've doubled the number of users in like 2 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So it's this crazy curve, actually, in the process.
So for those of you that haven't seen the article... So if you just haven't seen the article, there's John's put a, you know, can see it on FX Guide, but like in 2008, there were 150,000 downloads of CUDA. Seems to be reasonable, right? In 2015, 7 years later, there are 3 million downloads. And so the graph goes. It just keeps on going in terms of the number of things that, and it's just extraordinary stats. But what you're saying is that while that is a seven-year thing, which obviously is a lifetime in GPUs, just a year or so, it's grown enormously.
Yeah, I was actually just simply referring back to our articles. I think, what was it, the first year that I attended the full thing, which was in 2013. What did he say? He said that in 2013, there were 430 million installed CUDA GPU. Well, that's hard to say, but 1.6 million downloads of CUDA.
Yeah.
2 years ago. Okay. And so what is it now? It's like double that, right? Yeah, double that.
It's
effectively double that. Yeah, so close to double that in 2 years. So that's pretty impressive.
Although it's way off the radar, and well, not off the radar, but it's just, you know, it's like subject to change, I guess. But Volta, is that the one after Pascal? Am I right?
Not many details about that. Didn't even speak about that at this one. I think we have a little bit about that maybe in the 2014 report, but can't remember. But no, there's nothing mentioned that. In fact, at the press conference, Several of us tried to get a few more details about the upcoming Pascal, and it was basically, we don't want to talk about that. Yeah, right,
watch
now.
This space.
Yeah, it was really basically shut down. They did not want to talk about how the memory were anything. So that's a later day. They were just very much want to focus on what was going on. Now,
so, you get given like, you know, 6 or 7 Titan X cards to take away as door prizes or anything?
Not given, but stolen. Yeah, no. I just, I wish.
Way to go,
yes,
John.
I only wish. That $1,000 price point, that's pricey, but as a point on the art, that's quite reasonable compared to the 2 GPU version, 2 processing unit version of the Titan Z, which is $3,000. So prices are certainly coming down.
Excellent.
Maybe in large part due to some of the competition from AMD.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed that AMD's now come on as a principal sponsor of VRLA and stuff. I wonder if they're going to be stepping up their game. I mean, what's your read on NVIDIA versus AMD in terms of
I got some juice? I know we were at an NVIDIA conference, but I think there was more talk actually about AMD and I think putting pressure maybe on NVIDIA. One thing about in our market is that NVIDIA is very much entrenched at many of the major facilities and especially in post-production. AMD is starting to give them, I think, a run for the money, and you're seeing other people move away from CUDA-only implementations of code into the more general OpenCL. I mean, you take a look at Otoy announcing at GTC that they were shifting to not just CUDA, but also OpenCL was kind of interesting, I thought. Hello. The fact is, they simply have to do that.
Right.
To, you know, keep up. The reality is basically what's driving that is, frankly, the OS X platform. The reality is they just, they're artists who use Macs, and they just need to be able to support that. They've got to get it done at some point.
Right.
Because they can't sit around waiting for if and when NVIDIA cards end up being part of, Apple hardware, again, other than in the MacBook Pros.
Yeah, I guess from my point of view, it was always a matter of when, not if, but it's starting to look more like if, doesn't it?
It is, yes. I mean, I certainly didn't learn anything. Ask the question again, as always, but still, as we'd like to be very much involved in with Apple, but that's all they can really say.
That's interesting. Okay, and did you run into any PhD members?
I did not. It was nice. I ran into several of our readers on FX Guide and so forth. And actually, I got stopped just as I was running to the airport by someone who just wanted to say that they appreciated the stories that a couple stories, Mike, that you've done recently that they really enjoy, but said they check the site every day. So that's always nice to hear. As we've said, Mike and I both said, it's really good to hear from people in person at these shows.
Yeah, I mean, I'd actually like to flag the fact that we only have one place for one name to go on a story, but certainly my stories are always contributed to by John and Ian, and it's very much a team effort, so that's great. And obviously Jeff, especially on the podcasting side of things, but yeah.
And similar to the GTC story where you guys did yeoman's job helping me out overnight.
Oh, really? We didn't do anything, but... No, you definitely did the heavy lifting on that, but so good that you were able to do that, because I do think it's really important. There is just something about being on the ground. You get that extra insight into what's going on that is just so important, especially for members as we try and, you know, give a clear idea as to directions of what's going on. I mean, that's what
And
we
it's
want,
also right? good to touch base with people in person. We always find, totally. Too, that's actually a big aspect of being here at the show. And I joked about the course, but I'm not really joking about that. I mean, the fact is that, you know, we need help from people, give us heads, you know, leads on people to teach the course and things like that, and partner with them in order to get software available for our members and so forth. So visiting a conference like this and making those contacts is really critical for FX PhD. Once you meet someone, it's a lot easier to deal with things online after you've met face-to-face. So that's a fantastic aspect about attending a show like this. And this show is especially can be quite technical in nature. Some of the rendering sessions from yesterday, I mean, I'm fine to say this, Mike, but I mean, you know, they were a bit over my head, would not have been over your head, I don't think. But I truly enjoy it. I love having my brain fed like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny sitting next to another writer on who covers the same industry, their site that I'm sure you would know, and they were like, oh my God, they just need to make these sessions more interesting, because I'm just like, this is just too technical. And I was kind of like, actually, I'm kind of enjoying it. You know, it's like, this is really awesome. So, that's one thing. Yesterday was crazy from that standpoint. I mean, basically sitting in a room for 2.5 straight hours, listening to 5 presentations in a row on various applications of GPU rendering was just, I got to say, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've got to say, I do love not being in a position where it's being dumbed down. I'm you know, obviously for anyone in any particular situation, you're going to get that thing. Well, I didn't kind of get that at all. And I get that, but it's wonderful to be in an environment where you just don't feel like you've got a lot of headroom. I prefer to have some stuff that, you know, maybe I don't get, but I don't want to be in that situation. It's like, well, obviously I get all the stuff. It's really, I need something a bit more than that. I remember seeing a presentation at NAB and they were like, we did this, and we did this, and then we did this thing here. And we put this person from this shot into this. And I'm like, wait a second. And I'm like standing there just watching this thing going, did I just see magic? And I went up to them after and said, well, how'd you do that? Oh, no, that was hours of work. And I said, well, but how'd you get the mat for that? And they went, oh, no, it's all hand-wrote-oed and stuff. And I'm like, well, you know, like it's so dumbed down that there's no point watching the demo because you're missing not just hours, but days of work. And I'm not learning if you're just saying it's as easy as A goes with B goes with C. Well, yeah, if that was as easy as it was, that would be pretty interesting. But skipping all the hard bits. And so I guess that's what I really like, those conferences where we do get the technical stuff. And, you know, there are always little nuggets that cause you to go away and research things and say, oh, I didn't know about that. I want to find out a bit more about that. What is that? And that's really, really valuable.
The other thing about it, Mike, too, is that the, you know, the people at the session when they're attending, they're incredibly approachable. Now, I get that via the FX guide thing, people know who we are and they're nice to us. But it's not just, you know, we're staying around talking to people after the show. It's not just me, right? It's just a student or someone from a university somewhere or a company that everyone's really generous. And I mean, frankly, yesterday after one of the, you know, after the Redshift presentation, it was like, what, 1 o'clock last night, I was writing and I was kind of confused in hindsight about what he's talking about. Go back and talk to him in the booth, spent like 15 minutes walking me through this, really generous with their time. Yeah. But not just doing that with me. I mean, it's using an opportunity to actually learn and expand my knowledge. And if you dumb things down, I'm just not going to learn anything, you know, in the end. It's going to say, yeah, that's cool, but you're frankly not going to learn it.
Yeah, well, I completely agree. And, you know, I also know that, well, it sounds like I'm tooting my own horn, but I also know that quite a few people are happy to spend the time with us because we do try and get it right, as opposed to just write things that are the sensationalist kind of, you know, headline that really misses the point. But it is a lot of fun doing that. It's hard work though. It's really hard work. That's the thing. Being up to 1 o'clock in the morning, writing up the notes after having a whole day in brain draining lectures, man. Yeah, yes. I know that one.
It's a good life, but it's fun, but tiring, but it really is enjoyable. And so again, I hope people enjoyed the coverage and I certainly enjoyed being there. And again, it's going to pay dividends for FXPhD with some of the meetings that I had when I was up here as well.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your quote downtime between leaving the conference and getting on the plane.
Between getting through TCA and getting on the plane is basically what it's been. So yes, we are boarding now, so we should probably hop off.
Okay, so we're going to be not doing break week, and then of course we'll be back for O week. We hope you guys will join us next time. We have a terrific lineup coming up. We'll be doing some stuff on the Twitters and online. You can follow all of that and follow us, of course, over at fxphd.com. Until then and next time, John, thanks so much. Have some fun and some relaxation, my friend.
Will do. Thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FXPHD.